Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashirean co-host, Joe Nutsy Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, good, thanks. I had an early start because I wanted to watch the Australia in the India T20. So that was a pretty good game. Kind of fizzled out at the end. But yeah, overall, it was quite a good game. So yeah, a bit tired, but commitment to watching cricket, I guess, isn't it? Yeah, unfortunately, Maxi didn't get any runs. I don't think he had a ball either, but he's done pretty well so far this series. Yeah, he got 2 runs, yeah. And I don't know how the umpire didn't give his LBW out because it was absolutely dead. But yeah, he's had a good series. And hopefully he gets runs when he comes back to Lancs next summer.
Again, Joe, you'd never be able to tell, would you, that you're a Lancashire man?
Already, not even a minute in.
I mean, what are we, 28 episodes in? Not enough Lancashire references, I don't think, mate. But at least you're doing well. Okay, that's the most important thing. Glad to hear that you're doing well, mate. And also joining us on the County Cricket Podcast today is none other than Sussex County Cricket Club captain, Ben Brown. So Ben, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Hi, guys. Good to meet you both, and thanks for having me on. Yeah, I've had a good day so far. Popped in to do a little bit of training, and now, yeah, joining you guys on the podcast on a sunny Friday down in Hove, so things are looking good.
Lucky that it's sunny. Yeah. Rainy and miserable in Manchester as ever.
As always.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not looking too much better here in rural Warwickshire, unfortunately. Quite cloudy. Probably going to have a bit of rain later. But yeah, just before we do head into today's podcast then, just for the listeners at home, of course, we're going to start by talking a bit about Ben's early cricketing journey, move on to his favourite moments at his time at Hove, and then, of course, we are going to finish today's podcast with everyone's favourite segment, Teammates. However, today, seeing as it's December, there is a bit of a seasonal twist. We've got some Christmas-related questions in there, so watch out for that later. But before we do that then, Ben, let's start right at the beginning of your cricketing journey then, the origin of your cricketing days. What's your first ever memory of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Well, my first memory actually is probably not a positive one. I was shouted at for riding my bike around the cricket square in the village I'm from in Balcombe. I think I was about 8 years old, and looking back now, it was obviously a poor mistake to make. But as an 8 year old, I couldn't understand why I was getting shouted at. It looked like a green area. Thought I'd ride my bike over it. So yeah, probably didn't get off to the best start with the cricket guys at Balcombe. But then, yeah, post that, I think everyone played cricket in the village. It was sort of the social hub of place, and just got into it through that, just loving playing down there in summer's evenings. That's how I got into it.
Quite unorthodox in a way. I mean, most people are like, you know, they play on the green, not ride the bike around it. But yeah, fair enough, I suppose. And in those early days, Ben, who did you look up to in the cricketing world? Who were your real cricketing inspirations in those days?
I definitely think perhaps a bit later, but the sort of Alex Stewart, Adam Gilchrist, particularly Gilchrist, I think, his role changed the game. You know, I think he changed the role of the wicketkeeper batter from being a, you know, a keeper who could bat a bit down the order to actually the keeper playing a key role of the bat. So those two guys, cricketing wise, were definitely my heroes. And, you know, watching the Ashes, I think sort of in the late 90s and early 2000s, and those are sort of my best cricket memories. I think cricket on Channel 4, the orange and blue days going into those days, they're sort of what I grew up watching.
Yeah, pretty good times, and at least you didn't rub in the fact that you remember the 2005 Ashes, because unfortunately we don't. So yeah, we always
I was just I was about 15, I think, watching that Ashes series. It was just incredible. The whole, but I don't remember the whole country being gripped by cricket quite as much. Perhaps actually it's 2019 probably is the closest come to it being a lot of people, you know, that don't even like cricket talking about cricket. So 2005 was pretty special, and obviously it was really strange when Jason Gillespie became our coach in Sussex. It was a weird one, because I remember those days with his long hair charging into bowl.
Did you ever have any banter with him about the 2005 Ashes? I mean, I guess he could banter England fans as well, because Australia won so many.
Yeah, for a lot of
other
years.
Other than that, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really have a lot of success in his era. it mainly liked to talk about his double hundred against Bangladesh with the bat, actually. Yeah, he doesn't stop about that. So he's very modest about his own cricket, except his double hundred. So yeah, but certainly I don't think bringing up 2005 and Ashes and the Ashes success was too good with Dizzy, when they pretty much dominated us throughout my whole childhood, really.
Yeah, Australia were the dominant force, weren't they, in all cricket. Obviously won a hat-trick of World Cups, and yeah, they were a seriously good team.
Unbelievable. Now, I think I've got that memory of just sort of, unfortunately, Mike Atherton, who was a top player, obviously, I just seem to remember growing up watching him nick it and Shane Warne catch it off Glenn McGrath, and that just seemed to be like the start of the trouble. That's all I really remember from that series, those series.
Yeah, dark times for English cricket though, in terms of games against Australia and Ashes series in particular. But the 2005 Ashes was good, and obviously England now are in a bit of a more competitive side against Australia. So yeah, we'll see how they go in the future. But back onto yourself then, Ben. How did you become a wicketkeeper?
Probably a similar story to a lot of guys. We just didn't have one in the, whatever we were, under nines or something. It was a class like, who's going to do it? Nobody really wanted to do it. I was very much just sort of a guy who played all sports. So if it was football, I wanted to be in centre midfield. If it was rugby, I wanted to be the scrum half. You know, cricket sort of made sense just to be the wicketkeeper. You know, I love to be kind of at the centre of the action. And so when we didn't have the wicketkeeper and I did it once, I sort of thought, yeah, I loved it really. It was, you know, the ball was coming to me pretty much every time. And that sort of suited how I like to play sport. So yeah, that's sort of how it came about.
Yeah, so like you say, I think that's actually how a lot of people, certainly guests we've had, have sort of found themselves with the gloves.
Especially if you're a useless bowler like I was, or am. So
what do you want?
A bowl left arm spin. You know, I don't want to talk about the fact that I have a first class wicket, but now you've mentioned it, we can talk about it.
is that the equivalent of Dizzy's double 100 in Test cricket for you?
It literally is, yeah. If you want to do a podcast on my wicket, that's fine. Graham Napier, you might have heard of him. He's my first class wicket, so no big deal.
Jeez. Well, you've got one. No one can take that away from you, can they?
Yeah, I'm done now. I'm done.
Just stick with the gloves.
Yeah.
But nowadays, as a cricketer, as a professional cricketer, how would you describe yourself?
I'm not sure, really. I think I'm probably one of those guys that's in between eras, I reckon. My passion as a cricketer is all in the longer format, or mainly in the longer format. I love the challenge of four-day cricket. I love having two innings. I love the hard graft to win a four-day game. I think that's, yeah, like we spoke about, I grew up watching the 2000, you know, five Ashes and before that. So that's certainly the cricket, you know, I'm used to. Now it's just about adapting to the other formats. I love where the game's going in T20 cricket. I love some of the skills on show. So, yeah, I guess when you're sort of my age, you've just got to make sure you're keeping up with all that modern, you know, the modern side of the game, as well as obviously, you know, continuing to love the longer format. So just in that middle ground, I guess.
Yeah, can't beat a bit of four-day cricket, can you?
No.
Or five-day cricket, you know, in Test cricket. You can't beat it.
Yeah, I love it. I love watching Test cricket over anything else as well. Good Test cricket, especially when the Ashes rolls around it. I think it's the best cricket to watch. That's, maybe I'm a purist. My wife would think I'm absolutely crazy. She just wants, if she's going to watch any cricket, it's T20. So, but I guess that's the whole point, isn't it? They get a new audience in T20 cricket, which is good for the game as a whole.
100%. Yeah, definitely. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was actually going to ask you to almost rank the three formats. What do you say? I mean, I'm guessing Test is your favourite, Ben, but how would you rank the three personally?
Yeah, I think I'd probably put Test, and then I'd put T20 second, and then probably the ODI cricket just after. It's not a slight on one day cricket. I just think that T20 format, you know, is just fantastic, isn't it? As a spectator, it's often in the evenings as well. Yeah, not many people have a full day maybe to watch the ODI, but whereas a Test cricket, you can dip in and out, whereas I think with a shorter format, you want to see the whole story. So I'll probably just say T20 for me pips the one day stuff.
Fair enough. And Joe, yeah. I will flip that question on to you as well, mate. What about you?
They're all number one.
Is that what I should have said?
Each their own, isn't it? Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Ben, in the sense that you know, T20 cricket just draws crowds in, doesn't it? It's a moneymaker, really, not in a bad way. I mean, it is ultimately, but not in a bad way. And this year, it's such a shame that people couldn't, you know, watch IPL cricket or watch T20 Blast cricket, because, yeah, it definitely draws in big crowds, and it's the same with first-class cricket as well. But we'll talk a bit about that later. So let's not get into that too much.
Yeah, 100%. And in fact, why don't we? I think that's a good place to pick up on county cricket in particular then, Ben. So let's talk about your time at Sussex. Okay, of course, you're born in Crawley, which is in the county of West Sussex. What do you remember from your debut at Sussex? What were you feeling on that day? How momentous of an occasion was that for you?
Yeah, it's pretty. I kind of split my debuts mentally, because I started in a game against Sri Lanka A. I wasn't a professional. I think I was about 17, maybe turning 18. I was just so excited to play that game. And a few of us made our debuts. And it felt like a really big occasion at the time. And it was really exciting. We had a three-day game. But I think I think it was a year later, I made my championship debut, and I realized in my championship debut how far away actually playing Sri Lanka A in a tour match is from playing at your championship game, where, you know, you're playing with all senior players, the pressure of the game is higher, everyone's in much more intense, whereas obviously you don't realize as a 17-year-old that the tour game for the senior guys is, you know, a bit of a leg off in many respects. Everyone's like, oh, just get through the week. Then you make your championship debut, you know, the crowd's in, everybody's up for it. The senior players are, you know, there's a little bit of pressure about performance, and definitely you feel like you've earned that a lot. So I was a lot more nervous actually on my championship debut. I was a year on as well, so I'd felt like I'd waited a while for it. Yeah, and the nerve showed actually. In my first class debut, I got 46 of 25 balls, which I'm not sure I quite got the ticket of four-day cricket at that point. That went pretty well. And then my championship debut, I was just nervous. I nicked off on naught. I remember just like walking off. I went and looked on camera, and I was batting with Murray Goodwin, like, you know, one of Sussex's great players. And I just remember thinking, like, please let that be a good ball. You know, at least let it be the ball I thought it was in my head. I looked at it. I'd pushed it about six stumps. Should have left it. Mars was like whacking his bat on the ground like it was a bad one. I was like, oh, deary me. But I didn't get a second innings, luckily, so I never had to face up a pair on debut. But yeah, so I think the championship debut is a bit more nerve-wracking than anything else.
Can I just say, if we had a badger alarm, it would be going absolutely crazy right now. That is fantastic recall, Ben. It really is. That's brilliant. 46 from 25. Do you remember who you were dismissed by?
If for Sri Lanka? I don't remember for Sri Lanka. It was the leg spinner. I got stumped because I remember my academy director, Keith Greenfield, gave me an absolute serve, saying I could have got 50 on debut. And then Richard Jones nicked me off for Worcestershire on my championship debut. You don't forget those memories because it's such a vivid time in your career, and it's nerve-wracking and exciting all at the same time.
Fair play. And as we said, we respect that. I mean, as fellow Badgers, of course. I mean, we've got the Badger set here at the County Cricket Podcast today.
Yeah, I know my numbers, actually. I tend to know everyone else's numbers as well. I'm always looking around numbers and stats and things like that, so I'm pretty good at them.
You've just accepted a challenge then, there, Ben.
Okay. I won't be able to take you on. I'm confident of that.
No, it's fine. Just in front of me, I have your first class runs. How many do you have in your 145 games to date?
I'm reckoning 7,700-ish.
I mean, that's mightily impressive.
That is very, very good guess.
27 runs off, 7,673.
I'll give myself a few extra.
To be fair, 2021, you never know, should get 27.
It's going to be a long year if I only get 27 in the whole year.
8,000 next year?
Yeah, it'd be a nice milestone, yeah. Things like that are really nice. I'd love to get to 10,000, you know, in the sort of near longer future, I guess. But that'd be a really, really nice milestone to reach.
Yeah, it would be indeed. And great for, you know, a Sussex lad being able to do that for Sussex is great. But we've kind of already touched on future proud moments, I guess. What would you say your proudest moment to date is so far in county cricket?
Yeah, it's been a few moments. I think probably becoming captain, club captain, sort of seeing my name up on the board of former captains was quite surreal in many respects, because I've obviously known those guys over the years and seeing those guys operate and play and played under a few of them. And then obviously, you know, the history of the club. So, yeah, I think to see my name up on that board is probably right up there for me.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Ben, because I wanted to ask in particular about captaincy actually in this episode, because as we all know, you are Sussex's club captain. First of all, you took the role from Luke Wright, who's obviously an absolute legend of not just Sussex, but I think county cricket in general. Everybody that I know loves Luke Wright to absolute pieces. So how big of a moment was that for you personally? Did you find that quite difficult to accept that role from such a legend, or did you take it in the flow?
Yeah, it is tricky. I think Luke had stepped down a little while before, and I kind of filled in the season before. So I think in that respect, I guess I was a bit more of a natural handover in a difficult period for the club where, you know, Luke had decided to move on from the captaincy. I think there was a change of coach as well in that time. So I'd sort of dipped my toe in the water for a few months, and then Dizzy came in. And the nice thing was Dizzy split the role, which I thought was really sensible management. And Wrighty was then reinstated as T20 captain, and for me as club captain. So I think in that respect, you know, we both had had roles that we were really proud of and that we could work together on, because, you know, we're great mates at Sussex as well. So I think in the end, after that initial strange period, it sort of worked out that we both could lead the club and we both had a good job to do. So yeah, it worked out really well.
That's nice to hear. And of course, yeah, Luke Wright, God, what a legend. I mean, Joe, I know you like Wrighty as well. How would you describe him as a player?
Well, I mean, he's so hard to get out, isn't he? He really is. And he just seems to... I mentioned before we started recording the podcast, when I was at finals day with Sussex and... in 2018, Sussex and Lancs were there on the same finals day. Fortunately, we got knocked out in the semi-finals. Sussex got to the final. I remember Luke Wright's innings in the first game in the semi-final. What did he get? Did he get 92, I think?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, and that was one of the best T20 innings I've ever seen. Without maybe the best, like live at a ground, maybe the best. And I thought that was going to be the first T20 100 I'd witnessed live as well. It wasn't. I've still never seen one.
Really?
I don't really know how. Yeah, it's crazy. I've never seen one. And I thought that was going to be it. But yeah, it wasn't to be. But yeah, Wrighty's he's such a good player, isn't he?
Yeah, brilliant. I think also that the challenge as well for Wrighty as captain, it's not as easy as it looks to go out and play with that freedom in a T20.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, he's been doing it all his career. But then when you're captain, there's that temptation to, you know, want to play safe almost and just try to get the guys to a score. So, yeah, for him to have the bravery on finals day just to go out there and play like he did was amazing.
Yeah, he's a great player. And for me as well, I'm a Melbourne Stars fan as well. That's who I support in the Big Bash. And obviously he's played for quite a few years. He didn't play anymore, but he played for quite a few years with the Stars. So, yeah, that was another string to the bow of why I like Luke Wright, I guess you could say. It's probably not the best way to phrase it, but yeah, he's a great player. He really is.
100%. And talking of Wrighty, just before we delve deeper into captaincy in general, Ben, of course, we did just have a couple of questions to ask in relation to Luke Wright. First of all, what's it like to share a dressing room with him? What's he like as a character?
Yeah, he's good. He's really funny. Very, very funny guy. So he's always what the guy that kind of lightens the room, I guess, particularly if there's, you know, sticky moments or something like that. He'll always, you know, use humour to try and pick the guys up and things like that. So, yeah, he's great fun, Wrighty. You know, we've got a great friendship. And, yeah, as you say, you know, there are not many people that have got bad words to say about Wrighty. He's been a really good, fun guy to play cricket with over the last few years.
100%. And yeah, I'm sure Luke will be very happy and glad that you said that, Ben. And of course, talking of you two, almost as a dynamic duo per se, you have shared some fantastic partnerships for Sussex over the years, most notably behind me, of course, that knock at Lords.
Yeah, I mean, it was, well, firstly, Luke Wright scored 166 and you yourself, Ben, scored 55. And it was a pretty incredible partnership that you shared. What was it like being in the middle? Because, I mean, the fact that it was Lords as well, to share a partnership like that, as you say, with one of your great mates at Lords, it must have been pretty special.
It really was. Those are the special moments you look back on in your career and you just think how lucky you've been to play at that level. And I actually had one of my schoolmates in the crowd as well. We played cricket together growing up, and he said for him it was really special to see me out there as well. And you forget sometimes, you play so much and you're so busy that sometimes moments like that come around where you think, actually, you know, we've just gone out there at Lords, Wrighty's played, you know, one of the knocks of his career. You know, you've battered with your mate in the middle at Lords, had an absolute cracker. We won the game. It's really special. It's obviously a different feeling when you're actually in the moment of batting. Well, I came in, we were in a bit of trouble, actually. I think we were five down early. And the pitch wasn't easy at all. That makes Wrighty's knock incredible. So for me, it was just trying to put my ego away as much as anything and not try and match Wrighty's hitting. When someone's having a day like that, I think if you can use your skill to get off strike, find gaps, get ones, and just keep rotating the strike, I think that was a really important thing for me. But yeah, sometimes you think, blimey, this is, it's almost embarrassing. You stood there sort of knocking balls into gaps whilst Wrighty just goes and hits 100 metres over the stand. So yeah, it's one of those days where even towards the end of the innings, I thought, yeah, this is not my day. I'm just going to get Wrighty on strike. And you kind of realise the enormity of his innings more after the game. And also, I felt a bit better about my own innings. I got a runnable 55, but then actually the Middlesex guys all struggled to bat, and we'd struggled to bat early. So it was one of those things that Wrighty just played at just one of those innings you just can't stop it on a pitch that actually wasn't that easy.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, how you rotated the strike and you only hit five boundaries in that innings, four fours and a six. So, yeah, I mean, as you say, that's just one innings that sticks in my mind of Luke Wright's. And yeah, that was on Sky as well, to make it even more special. I guess you could say that was on Sky. And it was just, as I said, at Lord's. So it was a pretty incredible partnership.
Yeah, well, I love batting with Wrighty because I think we score in different areas, and we played a lot of championship cricket together, batting five and six, and we had some great partnerships and great times where Wrighty tends to stay leg side of the ball, uses cut shot a lot. I tend to get a bit further over and pull. So yeah, we tended to, I think, drive bowlers nuts at times when we got going, and I think we've had a couple of over 300 partnerships, which again, for us two is really special. You know, we won't forget those in a hurry. Those were amazing times.
Yeah, definitely. And I know this is going to put you on the spot, but if you had to choose one, you mentioned obviously that partnership at Lord's, you had a 335 run partnership or something at Durham as well. If you just had to choose one, the dynamic duo of Brown and Wright, which would you say was your favourite ever partnership?
I think I'd actually go for the one in Durham. It's at Sussex against Durham. I think I'd say that because we had one at Worcester where we put on loads, which would be a close second, I think. But yeah, we broke quite a few records that day. And I just remember it being a great day because it was doing a bit in the morning and we were five down early. I think we were 90 for five and then we were able to put on 335. And I just think from that point of view, I just know how you feel as the opposition. You sort of feel like you're nearly into the bowlers. And then, yeah, it's just one of those days that everything went for us, you know, for us both, you know. I think Wright got 180. I got the highest score of my career, 163. And it was just a really amazing day.
Again, fantastic knowledge.
187, Luke Wright, I reckon.
Two runs off. I mean, either.
189.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah, it was a good knock anyway.
Tell you what, Benny, if we ever have a county cricket badger off, we're going to put you in as our candidate from the county cricket scene. Absolutely incredible.
You know your stuff.
Yeah.
You've got to be a student of the game, you know. That's what I was taught when I was a young player. Be a student of the game and know what everyone's up to.
Very, very wise advice and wise words from Sussex County Cricket Club captain Ben Brown there. And of course, Ben, we were talking about the captaincy beforehand. How do you personally approach that role? How do you go about captaincy?
I think the biggest thing I'd say to actually, if anyone's talking about, you know, captaincy or leadership or anything, the biggest thing I think is you have to almost be doing the role before you get the role. I think if you don't act like a captain or you don't do what's in the best interest of the team or try to lead the team and then you're given the role, I think that's where it can go quite badly wrong and that's where people struggle. I was lucky. I felt like I had a bit of an education. When Ed Joyce was captain, he was at first slip. Obviously a fantastic cricket player, brilliant guy, loved Joycey, just amazing. But for me, obviously, you almost naturally, because I stood at first slip, you know, I wasn't vice captain or anything like that. I was only in my mid-20s. But that really helped me because Joyce is constantly bouncing ideas off me, making me think about the game all the time. So I think that period of time really helped me that when Wrighty then elected me as vice captain, that was, again, another period where you just start to think a bit more about it. So my journey into captaincy, I'd say, really helped me adapt to the role and just sort of get off and running because I felt like I was thinking about leadership in the team a long way before captaincy. Captaincy is different. It's a lot more pressure. It's a lot more busy. But I think if you've had that period, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I feel like, you know, certain people are just made for as well. Like Owen Morgan, Kane Williamson. Obviously, like you say, they would have learned along the way and developed. But I feel like some people are just made for it. And you can tell that from quite an early age. But I mean, I mentioned actually two captains that kind of leads me on to my next question. I mentioned two captains there. If you had to single, let's exclude them for now because obviously they're two of the best. If you had to maybe select one or two other captains, let's say from county cricket actually, who you say like up there with, you know, some of the best, who would you say?
Well, tricky. I would have said I'm a huge fan of Owen Morgan. The way he's gone about it, I think he's a great example to everyone. I think he's so strong in his leadership. I was watching the T20s. I think they were playing out in New Zealand and I think he left David Milan out of the last game, even though he got a 90. And I think it was something to do with not running a leg by on the last ball because he wanted to get run out. And I just think like their strength of leadership is a great example to everyone. And then obviously what he's taught, you know, Milan, he's then gone on and to become the best player in the world. There's things sometimes people don't always pick up.
Like a knock-on effect kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think someone like Tendiscarter at Essex, I thought was brilliant. You know, he's still, I think, one of the fittest players on their staff. He's 40. I know he's not captain at the moment, but the example they set, and I felt we played Essex for the first time in a long time this year in four-day cricket. They were hugely impressive. Tendo's handed it over to one of my under-19 colleagues, Tom Wesley. But it sort of looked seamless because Essex clearly have that really strong culture. So, yeah, you look at them in county cricket at the moment and think they've obviously got some good leaders in their camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And this is something that I feel like has been kind of, there's been a bit of a debate, arguably, about wicketkeepers being captains over the last few years because of the distance from the bowlers, certainly from fast bowlers. Do you ever find that's a problem? For example, if you need to communicate with Ollie Robinson, let's say as an example, do you ever find that's a problem and the umpires maybe have a problem with it because, you know, it takes a fair bit of time to get from your mark to the bowler's mark?
Well, it's easy with Ollie Rob because basically, do you want six slips or five most of the time? So that's pretty straightforward. No, you're right, though. It is a disadvantage to a degree, but then you could flip that round and say, I've got the best view of the game. You know, towards the end of bowler's spells, you start to feel it's not hitting the gloves. You can almost nip that spell in the bud a little bit earlier than perhaps, you know, mid-off. I think the key thing with any captaincy or leadership, really, whether you're a wicketkeeper or not, is you're sort of lieutenants in the team, if you like. Yep. So, you know, if I've got Ollie Robb at mid-off, you know, maybe Mitch Clayton at mid-on, you know, we've got a lad like Henry Crocombe on debut or playing his second first-class game, it's important then for me. I can actually just leave them to it. You know, they know far more about bowling than I do. So it's actually important that you get those guys in right spaces. You know, maybe have a Chris Jordan in the team. You know, he's brilliant, you know, to have in your side. Somebody like that. And if you can, I mean, Geordie's obviously at first slip, but if you can dot those guys around and sort of at least you've got to actually give off leadership to other people and encourage them to help the bowlers, not just try and be a one-man show, which I think actually you start to learn the more you get into the job. I think when you first take it, you want to prove that you can do everything. Oh, I can keep, I can bat, I can captain, I don't need anyone. And now you start to learn, actually, it's the wrong approach anyway. You know, you need a load of opinions. You need a load of diverse opinions to go into the team. So it's definitely something I'm thinking about. And in four-day cricket, you can get away with field placings. You can get away with, you know, place mid, Ollie Robert mid-off. As long as they're not slip fielders, you can actually start to think about that as well.
Yeah, that's quite interesting because, as I say, a lot of people, I think there's kind of a, as I say, like a bit of a debate maybe where people aren't so sure whether keepers are efficient, if you like, as captains. But I mean, you just totally made that, you know, turned that into nonsense. So
I was watching Quinton de Kock, and I guess they were talking about him. And the thing that looked like he was missing was, you know, Simpala was getting targeted. And although people were criticising Quinton de Kock saying, why is he not running up there? I would turn that around and say, you know, where is Ashley Nortegay? Nokia, he's just played in the IPL. Yeah, I don't know where he was fielding. Where's Faf? You know, where's Rabada? These guys with all that experience, you know, maybe actually you can look at it a different way and say Quinton de Kock could probably use those guys actually and get one of them in the circle, extra cover, and then they can help him out by getting up to a young bowler and just making the plans clear. So I think there are ways around it. There's always challenges. Sure. But if you can do your glove work, that's a big part of it as well.
Yeah. And I guess the best example of keeper captain is MS Dhoni. He proved how good of a captain any wicketkeeper can be. You know, he was right over there with the best. So, yeah. So let's talk a little bit now, Ben, about your county career and a bit more tougher moments. So what would you say the toughest moment has been that you've faced so far?
I think in the recent past, what really I had 3 noughts on the spin to start off the season as captain. And I think that was, you know, sometimes in your career, you think you're at a good place, you have a good pre-season, you feel fit, you feel ready. You think everything's in place as a captain to go. And then cricket just has a way of saying, you know, not so fast almost, like, you know, we're still here. Cricket's still here as a game to clip your wings, if you like. So I got a first ball of championship morning, like a nip backer from Tom Taylor. I was a good ball, like just clipped the top of off stump. And Ackerman bowled me on, spat out the roughs. So it was my first ever pair at Hove. And then, yeah, I just remember going up to Durham away. I mean, you don't want to go to Durham away when you've just got 2 knots on the spin. You just look at the fixture and think, oh, no. And just, I just got anxious. Yeah, I got anxious as captain. I felt like I was letting people down, and tried too hard in the first innings of that game and got naught again. And I remember just thinking, oh, not again. Anyway, we cruised to victory in that game. Laurie Evans played really well with Stian Van Zyl and Wellesley, I think, in the second innings. We knocked off the runs quite easily. Anyway, Laurie decided to not run a three because he thought we'd won the game. And Stian Van Zyl got 100. So he'd hit a two out to extra cover for on 98. We were all celebrating Stian's 100, and Laurie thought we were celebrating the end of the game. So Laurie stopped running. So it was actually, the scores were level. End of the over, you can guess what's happening next. I'm next into bat, having just got three noughts in a row. Laurie then, completely confused, banged on the shin, LBW, and I've had to walk in facing my fourth nought in a row with one to win. And I thought, do you know what? I'm shutting my eyes, I'm having a swing here, I've had enough. And luckily it was just on my hip, and I sort of hacked it down to fine leg and ran up the other end and thought, well, that's my season off and running. Maybe I only score winning runs this year.
Did you celebrate the win more or the run more?
Honestly, the relief, yeah, the relief. Because I think that was a break after that. It was two championship games and then a block of 50 over cricket. And I thought, I don't want to have to wait a month for my first championship run of the season. So, yeah, so I think actually, in all seriousness, those moments are really tough. You know, you start to doubt yourself, you know, what's going wrong? What, you know, am I ever going to score another score? And I just remember feeling really, really low about that. I think as captain, any failures are just magnified, you know, tenfold almost when you're captain. Yeah. I think if you're a player, you can go under the radar a little bit. Oh, he's a good player. He'll get back in form. As a captain, it's seriously tough because, you know, you feel like you're letting the side down and people are talking about it more.
Yeah, I can imagine that's really tough. And I guess an even more sort of magnified example of that is when Joe Root had a dip in form and
yes,
towards the end of the Ashes last year, or even throughout the Ashes after a great World Cup where he wasn't captain. Suddenly he's the captain, has a bit of a dip in form, or doesn't get 100 really, and then, you know, comes back and obviously gets that double ton in New Zealand. So I guess it's all about how you fight back, I guess, in a way.
It definitely is. And, you know, for Joe Root, it's magnified, isn't it? We mentioned Owen Morgan as well. People will forget how much pressure that may put on Joe Root. You know, Morgan's done so well, the one-day side, T20, won the World Cup. Then everyone talks about his leadership. Then it's kind of Rooty's turn. If you know, his form dips, that's a lot of pressure. But I think for any cricketer, if you want to have a long career in the game, you don't ever know if somebody's going to make it long-term until they've failed repeatedly and then can come back from it. Because it doesn't matter who you are. You can look at anybody's career. Take Sachin Tendulkar. There'll be a period of time where he would have consistently missed out with a bat. And until you can learn to come out the other side of those failures, you won't be able to have a long career, because that's the biggest challenge for all us cricket players. We fail more than we succeed. That's the reality.
Exactly. And I love the fact that you mentioned that, because there was a quote the other day I was reading, and it's about Rahul Dravid. I can't remember the exact number of ducks that he got, but it was a quote saying, do you remember Rahul Dravid for the number of ducks he got or the number of runs he got? And of course, it's the latter. You're not remembered if you're a great player and you can overcome those barriers. You're remembered for the successes, and the failures just come along with it. As you rightfully said as well, Ben, cricket is the great leveller. It's consistently inconsistent, isn't it? It's as simple as that. It's a roller coaster game. At any moment, you can have a high that suddenly becomes a career low. And yes, it's about riding the wave almost until obviously the end of your career. And talking of obviously those tough moments as well, in terms of you personally, you mentioned as a captain, you feel the spotlight. How do you deal with those personal moments? How do you deal when the chips are down, your back's against the wall, things are quite tough? How do you rebound and bounce back from that?
Oh, it's really challenging, actually. I think earlier in my career, I very much brought that sort of bad form home. And then you have a stroppy evening, you know, you ruin your missus' night as well. You struggle and you get into a spiral, and you can take your form round with you. I think it's so important that you don't just identify as a cricket player. I think it's massively important. If you can get to a place in your life away from the game where at some point you go home and you're, I don't know, whether you're a husband, you know, you're a boyfriend, a son, you know, a brother, a friend, you've got to see your cricket. Or I personally see my cricket as slightly removed and try to get to a point where you can go home, have an evening, you know, get over it, if you like. Because otherwise, it's just too exhausting. It's too consuming. You'll get too high when you score runs and you get too low when you don't. It's clearly not as easy as that, and it's not as simple as that. But that's what I've tried to do, particularly in the second half of my career, is just try and get comfortable that not every day is going to go well, and have a way to kind of remove that stress, get home, and then actually just try to move forward and move on. And that, I think, has helped me become a lot more consistent in my cricket, being able to try and separate and have other things going on.
Mm, that's some great advice as well for any aspiring cricketers at home. And you mentioned there, of course, you don't want to bring it home. How do you cope with it then? Let's say, for example, that run of three ducks. What was your coping mechanism for those tough moments?
It's not easy at all. I'm really lucky. I've got, you know, a great family around me. My wife's brilliant. She's not into cricket, which I think is advantageous for me. You know, and I've got that support network. So I think that helped me a lot. And for me now, I'm at a point where I had to then look backwards and say, I've come through it before. I've come through bad runs before. I'll do it again. And certainly it really ignited a fuel in me, because there's always people, you'll be social media. There'll always be the keyboard warriors that they love to mock you, especially you get to a point in your career, you're a captain, you've done well. They love to mock you and things don't go right. So it really actually ignited a passion and a fighting spirit in me to come back much stronger from it. And I put three championship hundreds in a row together. Then the next three championship games, I got 300s, and I'm really, really proud of that, because the bit in between is what people don't realize. You know, I was able to train, I was able to train in a week off. Jofra needed to bowl in the nets, and I was able to train with him pretty much exclusively on my own, actually. He just needed someone to bowl to. So I was able to face him for almost an entire week, which doesn't do your confidence much good, but it does get your game back. So I think those little journeys in your career, those little weeks here and there where you are really battling, it's really tough and you feel low. You need your family, you need your friends away from cricket. I'd always advise people to have a network of people outside of your immediate cricket bubble to go to hang out with, go and have lunch, whatever. But then, to go and peel 300s off, that was what I was so proud of, that because, you know, it took a lot of strength of character in between that. And I guess it's a bit of a microcosm of having a longer career, I think, that you have to be able to do that. You have to be able to bounce back.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
Without a doubt. Yeah. And did Jofra bounce you in that week at all?
Always. Jofra wants to hit you in the head, whether you're his teammate, whether it's a net, whether it's he loves it, or he just loves it. He's brilliant. You know, you train at that intensity. You know, Jofra's an incredible bowler. He was getting ready for the Ashes, I think, at the time, or whatever it was. And yeah, to go and train, I just felt that training at that level, it really helped me. It really helped me long term.
Yeah, without doubt. And I mean, you saw his rise. What was he like as a, you know, as a younger person coming through? Because obviously he'd moved over from Barbados, and he wasn't necessarily accustomed to conditions and things like that. What was he like when he sort of came over?
Yeah, I think there's two things with Jofra that stood out so clearly at that time. I may also say Jofra's rise is absolutely no surprise to any of us. None of us are like, oh, I can't believe how well he's done, or, oh, you know, it's just not a surprise at all. Two reasons: that unbelievable amount of talent, raw talent, just unbelievable. You know, the first moment he got here, we were like, wow, you know, what a player. And then secondly, it's his mentality to go with the talent is just incredible. His appetite for the contest, his appetite to win, his appetite to beat the opposition and have absolutely no fear of failure is also just as extraordinary. And that's what I noticed. You know, this guy's not scared of anyone, anything. No reputation bothered him. The bigger the name in the opposition, the more he would get. He would just literally, I think Latham, we played against Durham on the early games. Latham played for Durham. Jofra just flew in at Latham, bullied him for two overs, nicked him off, and just loved it. And then the rest of the guys at Durham, no disrespect to them, but I think Jofra was a bit like, oh, he was like a kid who's just sort of like, you know, or maybe like a cat kills a spider and then they're bored because there's no one to play with. That's what it felt like with Jofra. So, yeah, incredible mentality. And he, in fact, my first memory of him, the first time I played him, he came down the hill to bowl in a T20 practice match and we hadn't seen him. He blew my poles away second ball, which it felt like he was cheating. I was like, I've never seen him bowl. You know how he jogs into bowl? When you don't know what he's going to bowl, he just sort of jogs in. Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm just going to whack him. He's a trialist. I was just filling my boots. And he just bowled an absolute rocket at 90 miles an hour and removed my middle stump. I was like, wow. And then he came in to bat and he didn't realize he was batting in the challenge. So he came in with one pad on and his shoelaces were undone and he hadn't got the other pad on in time. And I remember he just smashed Will Beer into the media center, first ball, dead straight six at home. And it was just one of those days where you just thought, wow, this guy is going somewhere very, very quickly.
He's a quality player. He is, 100%. I mean, that is one of the most privileged things, to be able to see a rise like that of one of a world superstar. That's what he is. He's so good. And does he talk about his batting a lot? Because his batting was pretty good in the IPL. Does he big his batting up a lot?
Joff just loves it. He loves cricket. He's just like a kid at Christmas with his cricket. Yeah. It's like he's got this humongous pool of talent, and it's just almost like such an enjoyable thing for him to play cricket, because 9 times out of 10 he's better than everybody else at it. That's why I think we all love watching him play. When he's on top of things, he's just loving playing cricket. He's an absolute cricket badger. He will know everyone's stats. You know, he'll know more than me. I can assure you that. He knows stats, numbers, players, you know, from all the past in the game. He loves watching the game. So I think it's part of why everyone loves watching Joff play cricket, because that personality, when he's happy and he's up and about, his happy place is playing cricket, which is pretty special when you've got his talent.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't like him as a cricketer. I don't think I've, like, as a fan, I mean, I don't think I've ever met a fan who doesn't like think he's a good player. Like, he would get into any team in the world.
Yes.
And that's a fact. Like, in like any format, without a doubt. I don't think I've ever met anyone who doesn't rate him as a cricketer. He's just one of the generation.
Yeah. I met one of his first championship games, which he got 7 for in, obviously, first inning. He came in and we had a night watchman. So Joff ended up batting 11, which is crazy. We had a team full of all-rounders. Chris Jordan was playing as well. So I think David Veitch was playing. Our bottom order was backed up. And then we had a night watchman. So Joff came in 11. And actually, Mitch Clayton, who's now my teammate, he gave me absolute verbal abuse. I was on about 60. And they put everyone on the boundary, you know, like bolt number 11. And first ball of the over, I just knocked it to the sweeper and ran, knowing obviously I'd seen Joff in the nets. I knew he could bat. The Kent boys give me an absolute verbal, you selfish bloke, playing for Red Ink. He just wants his Red Ink. I went, you watch this. And I said that to Mitch. I said, you watch this. And anyway, Joffre goes down the other end, nicks his first ball, the second slip. And I was like, oh no, luckily he got dropped. And I thought, I looked like a right plonker if he got caught. And then he went and smashed 60. And I remember walking off and Mitch was like, oh, fair play, mate, fair play. Like, yeah, this guy's a player. And then he got his 7 first. So, yeah, he pretty much straight from the off. I mean, his debut, he got 4 for against Pakistan. He made some of those guys look silly. You know, proper greats of the game were playing in that. And he was just born for it.
It's too good. It really is.
Yeah.
At times, it feels unfair at times. It does. It's like, this is unfair.
Yeah. And to have him and Chris Jordan as well on the same side for Sussex. Like two of England, well, Chris Jordan's England's best ever T20 bowler. And to have him and Joffre, obviously, side in any format, it's just...
Geordie's been amazing for Joff because Geordie's an amazing professional and obviously showed Joff the opportunity he could have at Sussex, and then obviously helped him with his professionalism and got him up to speed so quickly. So, yeah, Jordan's played an amazing role in helping him.
Yeah, obviously good mates off the field as well, which, they seem to be, yeah. So, yeah. And I guess the next question, you've kind of answered it. The toughest bowler you've ever faced in cricket. I mean, I guess you could argue it's Joffre in the nets, but other than that, who would you say?
Do you know what? You'll love this one as a Lancs fan. I always say it's a bit, my early days, like Glenn Chappell just used to give me nightmares.
Yeah, he's legend.
Honestly, he was such a good bowler, and especially like early part of your career, you're trying to make your way. Yeah, I was still saying county cricket. Like, I'll face guys, you know, Jimmy Anderson, Flintoff, lots of other guys. Don't know why I'm on a Lancs theme here.
Fine with that.
And overseas bowlers, of course, but I just remember feeling like this guy is all over me and I've got nowhere to go. But those things are important as well in your career, because it drives you to improve, because you're like, I can't have this. I can't keep coming back and not being good enough. So, yeah, but I would say he sticks in the mind just as a county bowler. Probably Alfonso Thomas as well. He had the wood over me. Skiddy bowler, bowled full. Those guys, they help you long term, because you go away, you're like, I'm not good enough. I've got to improve. I've got to find a way to play against the best bowlers in the country. So, yeah, it's always, at the time, it doesn't feel like it, but it's always an experience that benefits you.
Yeah, and Glenn Chappell, arguably the best player never to play a test. I don't know how he didn't play a test.
What about Hildreth?
I wouldn't have, yeah.
Okay, best ball, arguably the best bowler, never to wear a test. Hodges is arguably the best batter. But that is a debate for another day, without a doubt. But yeah, Chappie, what a player. And it's so good to have him on as coach still. Still like keep him around the club. He's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy and brilliant player and doing pretty well coaching-wise as well. And again, I guess you kind of already answered this. It may again be Jofra. It may not be. The toughest bowler that you've kept to.
Do you know what? I think they're enjoyable, though, those guys, because we've got pace and bounce. Josh tricky with his angle. We're so lucky at Sussex, like Tamal Mills to throw into that as well. He can be tricky because the slower ball, you get tempted to want to stand close to the slower ball. That's a bad mistake because the quicker balls is too quick. So I actually really enjoy that. I think that probably the bloke was most challenging was Rashid Khan. He's unbelievable bowler. I think when you've played professional cricket for a long time, you don't get surprised by stuff as often, I guess. You've seen most players, you've played against most players. When Rash came over, it actually shocked me how good he was. It shocked me how quick he could bowl and spin it both ways. And we played an inter-club game and it happened to be a turning wicket. And it was just, the guy's batting could barely lay a bat on it. And then I think I was just getting hit in the left shoulder and the right shoulder. So it took a while to adjust to Rash because he's an incredible talent.
Can you pick him?
Not really. It's a little bit easier as a keeper because when I was coming through as a kid, we had Mushtaq Ahmed obviously taking all the wickets at Sussex. So I had some exposure to it. As a keeper, you get an extra yard and you don't have to make a decision other than catch it. So it is an advantage and you can sort of guess on the line he's bowled it. But for a batter, you just got to pick it. You've got to play it. Then you've got to try and hit it out of the park in 2020. So nah, he's a challenge and he'll be a challenge. You know, I think he's coming back next year. So he's one of those guys, again, he pushes your standards as a cricket player because you know he's coming and you've got to be ready as a keeper because he's brilliant.
Yeah, thank goodness Lancs and Warwickshire aren't in the South group,
yeah,
the T20.
you mean the toughest group?
Yeah, it's...
debatable.
But yeah, Rashid Khan is generational as well, like Jofra, you could argue. He's phenomenal.
And yeah, you're quite lucky down at Hove to have these...
Yeah, you are.
Superstars.
The more we talk about it, the more we're like, wow. Obviously, Jofra... Yeah. Mills,
fantastic.
Jordan.
Fantastic, yeah. Cricketers on the show. Particularly those sort of Friday nights down at Hove. You know, we're trying to build, you know, really build up that kind of excitement around the Friday nights. And like you say, when we're at full strength with Jofra and Jordan are available, you know, Rashid Khan, David Visa, yeah, Wrighty himself, there's some real rock star cricket players.
Bill Salt, there's so many.
Yeah.
An absolute load.
Yeah, incredible. And yeah, good luck next season. And talking of next season, of course, Ben, let's look ahead to 2021 because it's going to be an interesting season with the brand new county championship structure. So before we talk about obviously specifics about next year, what do you make about the new structure? Are you in favour of it or do you prefer the traditional two division system?
I am really in favour, actually. I think I really enjoyed this year in the formatting of it because we played against teams we haven't played for a while. There was great opportunity to win it for everybody. So everybody starts that season knowing they could win the championship, which I think is an absolutely brilliant opportunity. It also potentially stops that kind of patching up of teams. You know, maybe they make a quick signing. It blocks a young player just to try and stay in a division or, yeah, we've done it ourselves. There's a lot of pressure to get out of Division 2. Then it affects who you sign and how you're thinking and, you know, the lot of pressure. I think this will help with giving opportunity to young players, which the Bob Willis Trophy showed they can do it. You know, you can still win games with young players. It was great to see all that. So I think the format's really good. You know, from our point of view, we were well down on players' numbers for all the reasons of COVID and all those things. We had a really young side out against Essex. You know, no Ollie Robb. You know, we had no overseas players. We were really down on numbers. We lost by 3 wickets in a brilliant game of cricket, which we led for most of the time against their side, and they were at full strength. So it really showed, if you're one of those young guys that got that opportunity to play against the top Essex side, you're looking at thinking, I can do it. You know, they've got self-belief. We could have beaten them. We should have beaten them. So I think the format's going to be great. You know, I think all teams go in it with the chance to win. You're playing against different teams. I'm really looking forward to it.
Interesting take on it, because obviously there's been a lot of debate around whether the structure is good, whether people are in favour of it. But I guess we've now on the podcast heard from a couple of
Yes.
Perspectives from Division 2. And actually, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, like you say, anyone can win it. And I guess that's a really good thing. It's anyone's game, isn't it? So I guess
that's... Yeah, it is. And I think there's a big sort of talk about divisions here and there and this stuff and all that. You play against... I've played in both divisions for a long time. There is a difference in cricket, but also... there's very little in it when you actually play in the same conditions. A lot of what happens in Division 2 is teams are desperate to get out of the division, so they prepare poor pitches. And actually the pitch is then even out of standard because they're so difficult to play on. That's the main difference between Division 1 and Division 2. And I think obviously the top, you know, maybe the top team, Essex, Somerset at the moment, you know, leading the way, clearly are stronger than the bottom two or three teams in Division 2. But the rest of that, I don't. I think it's a little bit more of a myth than it is anything else. And it showed we put out, which was just above probably a second 11, and nearly beat Essex. So I think it would be great to see. Be great to see all the teams competing against each other. And obviously, like it happened in this summer, Essex and Somerset still rose to the top and had a final, which I thought was great for the long format of the game. I'm really excited. I think there should be a Lord's final for county cricketers to aim for. It should drive the players. And I think to have a final, whoever you are, whether you've been at the bottom of Division 2 for the last 5 years or whether you've been leading the way, you got a chance to win it.
Good incentive.
Yes.
Very, very good incentive.
Yeah, of course. And heading into 2021 as well, you alluded to there, the young players at Sussex. Now, of course, this season you have lost quite a lot of talent. Danny Briggs, Laurie Evans, for example, those two have gone massive holes to fill. Luke Wells, who's gone to Joe York County of Lancs. I know you're absolutely beaming with delight there.
Yeah.
There are some good youngsters coming up through the ranks at Hove, in particular Jack Carson, Henry Crocombe, they've just signed contract extensions as well. Who do you think that we as county cricket fans should be looking out for from Sussex heading into next season?
I'm really excited about the young players. I think you're right. We have lost players and we had to protect ourselves as a club in obviously what's a financial disaster. And there's also, you know, an opportunity to really test our young cricketers. We've talked about it a lot in the past about giving them opportunity. We feel we've got into a bit of a golden crop at the moment with Richard Housel, our academy director, is fantastic. He was assistant coach to Andy Flower of the England team, you may remember. He's had a great career, very varied successes around the world. He did Bangladesh as well. So he has brought through what we feel is a great crop of young cricketers. So like you say, Henry Crocombe, I think, is really exciting. There's another one who hasn't made his debut is Jamie Atkins. He bowls 85 mile an hour as a 19-year-old. He's 6'4", I think. Really awkward angle. He is a really exciting talent. Like you say, Jack Carson had a fantastic debut season, really burst on the scene. He took wickets on day one. I think he got a couple of fourfers on day one to sort of highlight how well he did as an off-spinner. So, yeah, I think there's some fantastic cricketers coming through. The academy below that as well is really exciting. I think we're dominating the age group cricket as well. So I'm really excited about the future. It will obviously take time. There will obviously be some tougher times there when you give opportunities to young players. But that's certainly the way a club like Sussex has to be sustainable. We have to produce our own players, not just produce them and then develop them in the first class arena, if you like. And hopefully we can do that with success and also bring home the trophies.
Of course, yeah. And funny enough, we mentioned that the other day, though, Joe, didn't we? With regards to transition phases and just taking time. And of course, yeah, it will take a few years, but obviously the talent's there. The foundation is being laid per se. And yeah, should be an exciting time, I think, at Hove heading into the next few years, definitely. But in terms of your personal game then, Ben, we've spoken a lot about other aspects of the 2021 season. In terms of you personally, what are you looking to improve upon in your game heading into next season?
Well, I certainly want to contribute more in T20 cricket. I've had fairly limited opportunity in the last couple of years for the strength of the side as much as anything. You know, I think it's a great sign for us in T20 cricket. But there's been some decent players left out. So I'm really excited to work with the guys, the coaches this season, this close season, I should say, on my T20 skills, because it's a great challenge to get into what is a really exciting side. And I want to make sure that I can make an impact in the T20 cricket. So that's sort of one of my key work-ons, as well as obviously making sure I keep myself in as good a form as I can in the longer formats to make sure, you know, my standards don't slip there.
Yeah, I think that's encouraging signs for Sussex fans, for sure. And, you know, as you mentioned, that's us. We keep coming back to it. That's us. 60-20 side is so strong. And I think at the start of the T20, I would have definitely said up there with, you know, the best. And if the groups had, you know, worked differently this year, because worked the same as they did last year, or like they normally do, things could have been definitely different for Sussex. And I think going into next year, again, that could happen. But let's, Ben, talk about your future aspirations in the game, mainly post-cricket, because, I mean, in the T20 quarter-final this year, you actually did a little bit of commentary for the BBC. Now, obviously, that was between Lancs and Sussex, which Lancs won. I won't mention that anymore. but, yeah, as I say, you did a bit of commentary for the BBC, and that was played, I don't know about the Sussex stream, but that was played on the Lancs stream, that commentary, like, overlaid. So, yeah, how did you find that? And is that something that you would, like, be interested in going into after you retire?
I enjoy the commentating. Yeah, it's good fun. There's a really good team now at Sussex. Adrian Harms does it for Sussex. I really enjoy it. But ultimately, at the moment, you know, I'm 32. I want to play. You know, I want to play cricket at the moment.
For sure.
But I also, I like to be able to commentate. It kind of takes away from, if I just sit and watch with no control or anything, I find that hard. You know, you're so desperate for the team to win. So actually commentating gives a different focus. You know, you can kind of sit up there and at least I'm thinking about the cricket and what I'm going to say and trying to be neutral as well, which is not easy, especially the old rivalry of Lancs. So yeah, I don't want to think about commentating until after cricket. That would be something I would like to do on the side. I'm studying for a master's actually. Myself and Luke Wright are both on the same university course. So we've returned to being students over the last year or so. We're doing a master's in directorship of sport up at Manchester, which has been a really great experience. About a year and a half through now, I've learned so much from that. And just starting to try and carve out a career path afterwards, I will look into coaching and investigating coaching. But ultimately, I would like to be able to give back to the game. I would like to be able to give back to other players in one capacity or another. And hopefully in the future, I'd, you know, that directorship role really intrigues me now. I think it's such an important role in county cricket and sport in general. You see it in football, cricket, rugby, the directors and setting the kind of direction that a club goes is really important. So, yeah, just get my studies done, which is obviously hard around the cricket. You know, we're not used to being sat at computers with cricket players, but it certainly, you know, makes you realise how lucky you are to play cricket for a living when you've got assignments due and you're trying to work out what comma to put where in referencing and stuff like that. You think maybe batting against the Red Duke isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Relatable.
Student life, eh? Student life.
Yeah.
100%. And yeah, of course, Ben, we here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you the very best of luck, not only with the rest of your cricket days, but of course, beyond that as well. I think you'd make a great director, very, very interesting bloke, got some fantastic advice. And yeah, we wish you the very best of luck with that in the future, 100%.
Yes, without doubt.
I appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
No problem, Ben. But moving on from our main segment then, as promised right at the beginning of today's podcast, we do, of course, have Christmas teammates. Now, we are hoping that the listeners at home all enjoy this. We have put a bit of a seasonal flavour on today's teammates' questions. So to begin today's teammates section then, Ben, we shall start with a question which always produces some very, very interesting answers, to say the least. And that is the biggest diva in the Sussex dressing room.
Biggest diva in the Sussex dressing room. I have to think about that. We're not blessed with many. Phil Salt, he'll kill me for saying that.
Fair enough. The next one. Now, there is actually a hunch. I have a bit of a hunch of who this could be, potentially. This is a Christmas-themed one, the first Christmas-themed one. And if I am incorrect in my hunch, then I'll explain my reasoning for it after. But the biggest Grinch.
Biggest Grinch? Oh, that I will say. I'd say Phil Salt. Phil Salt, he doesn't like anything that's like too normal. Like if everyone likes Christmas, Salt, he'd be like, nah, Christmas is rubbish. If ever, you know, he's one of those. So I'll definitely, in my mind's eye, I can imagine Salty being like, nah, Christmas is rubbish.
Just not liking it. Well, fair enough. I was actually thinking it could be Jofra because I saw a tweet the other day and it was the weirdest combination. I don't know if you've seen it, Ben.
I have.
The Twitter interaction. I'm just going to quickly find it. Just let me quickly find it. So I can get
it's worth it, listeners. We promise. It's the strangest trio of Twitter, probably history. I'd argue.
Yes, it was not something I was expecting at
all. It's not the collab we ever thought we'd get, but here we are. 2020 delivers once again.
All right. So so Jofra tweeted on the 1st of December, I don't want to hear any Christmas music till the week after next. And he responded to, he was responded to by one of my favourite footballers, Marcus Rashford. Now, I think these two are actually like good friends. And he just replied, hey, Scrooge, at Jofra Archer, and then tagged a playlist and then tagged Mariah Carey in it. On the off chance she quoted the tweet, as she did. And Mariah Carey tweeted, no Scrooges allowed, it's time to get festive. Now, I have no idea if Mariah Carey knows about cricket or football. I've no idea if she knows who Jofra Archer or Marcus Rashford are. But it was the weirdest Twitter interaction I've ever seen.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah.
And I think, I can't remember, it was Carlos Brathwaite, I think, replied saying basically something along the lines of only you, Joff, can get Mariah Carey to personally try and get you in the Christmas spirit, which just about sort of sums up where Joffra's career is at the moment.
It was outrageous. And I've never liked a Mariah Carey tweet. I don't follow her on Twitter or anything. And that was the only time I've ever liked a Mariah Carey tweet. It was absolutely hilarious.
Maybe she's a, you know, closet cricket fan. You don't know.
Yeah.
It would be unlikely and extraordinary as an American singer, but you never know.
Well, you might. Well, I mean, Jofra and Marcus have obviously had Twitter interactions before, but Mariah Carey, just totally out of the blue, it's just outrageous.
Talking of random singers that are fans of the game, we were playing a game at the Oval, a four-day game, and it was day four, and it was sort of fizzling out into a draw, and no one was there except Florence and the Machine. I don't even know her real name. She's just sat right in front of the balcony, right, watching our game. She must have been one of about 200 people at the Oval. And everyone starts, like, Googling her tattoos because she's got tattoos all up her arm to make sure it was her, and it was her. So I'm waiting to bat, and this game's, like, fizzling out. Wells, you got 200, actually played brilliantly. The game's fizzling out, and I'm waiting to bat. I just sat there with my pads up at the Oval. There's sort of metal bars. So I sat down and on a high seat as well, so I couldn't move. And no one's really watching. And Matt Pryor runs out the dressing room and shouts, say my name, at the top of his voice, and then ran back into the changing room. So I'm the only mug that sat on the balcony. And obviously she's turned around, like rolling her eyes. I was like, you can't really explain that it wasn't you. So I was so humiliated.
Oh, I was not expecting that. Well, there you go. Two random singers who I would not have expected were cricket fans before. Well,
exactly.
Mariah Carey before the other day and Florence and the Machine before today. But there you have it.
There we go.
She might not be a fan after Matt Pryor's effort there.
Shame about that. I was going to make the same joke, but Matt Pryor beat me to it, obviously, a number of years beforehand. Yeah, moving on from that. I mean, the County Cricket Podcast, offering not only entertainment, but also education as well, learning new things every day. But moving on to our next one, which is also very much Christmas themed. This is hilarious. It really is, Joe. I'll credit you for this one. This made me laugh. Which player at Sussex is the most likely to want a cricket bat for Christmas?
Tom Haynes is like a 21-year-old who, when he returns home, is a 14-year-old. Mollycoddled. He sends a fried egg emoji. Oh, he gets a fried egg emoji when his mum's made him breakfast at home. So he's a bit of a spoil. He's like a sport boy. So I'd say Hainsey. I can imagine Hainsey getting a little cricket bat for Christmas.
Fair enough. The next one. One of the more usual questions now. And that is Karaoke King and the choice of song.
Millsy actually is a really good singer. We were asked to do a song in a studio by one of our former coaches, Mark Davis. It was The Gambler by Kenny Rogers, but it was with cricket lyrics. I mean, it's my worst nightmare. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't hear music at all. I just remember Millsy was pretty good actually in that. I was removed from the studio for being off key, which was pretty humiliating. I said to the guys, I can't sing, mate. I can't sing. Just let me out. And he goes, oh, you'll be fine. It's a really simple song. The lyrics are easy. We had these big headphones on like you guys have got. And I couldn't hear the music, so I'm just like singing. I knew I was out of line. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, if you don't mind just dropping out, we'll put you in the video. I was like, yeah, thanks, mate. So, but yeah, I just, my only memory of that was that Millsy had a really good voice.
Well, it could have got Mariah Carey and Florence and the Machine involved in that as well.
And Millsy. It could be one of the greats.
Could be one of the best bands going.
Jeez.
But there you have it.
You never know. 2020 could strike again. We could see it. There's still some days left.
And there,
Ben,
indeed,
in that interaction there, I noticed that you did say that the dance moves were lacking. So that brings us perfectly on to our next question. Who has the dodgiest dance moves?
Oh, dodgiest. Right, firstly, I'm going to give a shout out to Hainsey as well, again, because he's a tremendous mover. Brilliant. Trying to think of dodgy dance moves. Very tough. I don't know. I think I'm getting to the point where I'm at an age where I don't go to the bits where they dance anymore. Hainsey's quality has got all of the Fortnite, the whole shebang going on. But I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
You can include the coaches.
Yeah. I'll tell you who's got the dodgiest dance moves. Fancy himself a bit of a singer, a bit of a karaoke man. Jason Swift, our batting coach. You get him on any Queen song, he'd be up and about doing his impression of Freddie Mercury, and the dance moves aren't there to go with it. So Jason Swiftshire man, former Lancashire man.
Well, there Brilliant. You have it. We don't really, we're not known. Well, Manchester's known for singing, but Lancashire in general, not really known for producing our musicians. So, yeah. The next one then, a bit of a cricket related one, and you may be up for this, Ben. The biggest badger.
The biggest badger? Oh no, Jofra Archer, 100%. Jofra Archer, biggest badger. If he's not playing cricket, he's watching YouTube videos of cricket. Oh, he's on Twitter reading cricket. Like, he absolutely loves the game. So I would say the rock star Jofra Archer is our biggest badger.
And if he's not cricket, is he on COD?
Oh yeah, COD. God, they love it. They love it, the boys. Loads of the guys in our squad are playing it. They absolutely love it. I'd say a closet badger as well, who people wouldn't realise, would be Ollie Robinson, he loves his stats. He loves all the scores. He's always looking around cricket. He's a bit of a cricket nuffy as well.
Fair enough. And I don't know if this ever happened. You may know this, because Xbox promised Jofra a free Xbox, the new Xbox, if he got David Warner out in the IPL. Do you know if he ever got that Xbox?
Well, I do know that this week he's been tweeting thanks to them for something or other. So I presume that it was a promotional tweet, but it looks like they've sent him the new Xbox. So, well, yeah, some guys, you know how to live, don't they? Just bully David Warner, he's bullied one of the best players in the world and got a free Xbox. Fair enough.
Fair play to Xbox then, kept the word.
Yeah.
I mean, Jofra loves bowling to Warner, doesn't he? So.
Sure does, as does Stuart Broad. But yeah, of course, I think if Xbox didn't give him one, someone would buy him. I mean, especially after that World Cup. Just, oh, what a player. What a player. And I suppose Jofra would also be up for this next category, which is very, very topical. I believe it's the final of this tonight, actually. Who would be the most likely to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
I would definitely say if Luke Wright went on there, I think he'd win it. I think he'd keep it. I think he'd make everybody laugh. You know, he's a cheeky chap, handsome boy. I think Wrighty would win I'm a Celeb, I reckon.
I would vote for him.
I would. I always just vote for the sports people to do the trials. So this year it was Mo Farah. He unfortunately didn't do many, but I just kept voting for Mo Farah. Disappointed.
Tamal Mills would be the most likely to go on it. I reckon he'd love to go on it. I think he'd be good actually. I would back Wright to be popular, but I think he'd maybe chicken out of some of the challenges. But he'd get voted for.
I'd agree with Tamal. I think that's a great shout. Got great presence, good character as well. Quite likeable, Tamal Mills.
Yeah. Great rig as well. He got a great rig for it. You know, if you're going to be in the jungle with your kit off, Mills is in good shape.
Fair enough. And the next question then, who is the best footballer?
Me. And then, I would say me and Wrighty have a bit of a goal scoring sort of challenge with each other. We would be described by our teammates, both greedy, both selfish in front of goal. So as a strike pairing, we didn't go well. We play young v old. So I'd say in the old, myself, Luke Wright, Will Beer is a very talented sportsman. In the young, and I'd have to probably put my ego aside and say Delray Rawlings is probably the best footballer on the staff. Certainly talent-wise. End product in that young team, you know, they're inexperienced, they try too much. But Delray is a threat, I must admit.
Do you ever have anyone splitting between the two teams if you have, like, maybe some guys back from international duty or anything? Do you ever have that?
Yeah, the sort of like 25, 26-year-olds.
Yeah.
And the one of Phil sort of refuses to switch sides. He is adamant he's in the young team, and he absolutely abuses the referee. He derails him. He gets so emotional playing football. He derails the youngsters. We just wind him up. We're not allowed to play anymore. So we had a whole season without it. We miss it. But Mitch Clayton's brought in this game with a tennis ball, and you have to sort of slap it over with your hands. You're only allowed three goes over. It's good fun. But yeah, we miss our football. We miss it madly.
Yeah, bring football back 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. Crowds and football, and we're away.
Exactly, yeah. A message we can all get behind. And yeah, sounds interesting. That's Sussex football team then. You got Phil Salt, like the Roy Keane of the team, and the Bermudan Beckham in Delray Rawlins.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant, yeah. Delray's a fantastic young character as well. Moving on to the next one. This always seems to offer up a lot of debate. So choose wisely here, Ben. Who's the best golfer at Sussex?
Oh, this will offer up a debate, actually, because I'm not in the little golf gang. We've got two gangs which are sort of emerging. We've got there's a Sussex sort of cycling club that they're your classic, you know, men in lycra that go out. They love it. And then there's a bit of a golf team emerging. I definitely would have said Laurie Evans, but he's obviously a Surrey player now. I think he's off about six. Will Beer, hugely talented golfer. I'm just trying to think of the younger crop coming through. If there's anyone, I don't think we've got anyone. I'm still backing Will Beer to take most of the golf guys down. He's one of those really annoying players to play with. He's my best mate. We used to play golf together. He's one of those annoying players. He's got the touch around the green. You know, just when your round's all going wrong, you've had a nice drive and you just sort of obviously fin it miles over the green. You've got Will Beer. He's got a beautiful touch. So yeah, I'd say Beer is still up there as the best golfers.
He'll thank you for that later on Twitter or Instagram. Send you a cheeky message. Yeah.
And the final question then is, who has the best celebration?
It's hard to look past Ollie Robinson. I have to temper them a little bit as captain. Sometimes he gets a little bit too enthusiastic with his celebrations, but his passion in his celebration is unreal. I'd say Jack Carson is running him a close second, young Irishman who had a fantastic debut season. He was going wild for his wickets, which is awesome. We were sort of trying to do the COVID thing. We weren't supposed to obviously celebrate, but when somebody's as passionate about that getting his wickets, it was tough to not get amongst them. So Ollie Robb was sort of an apprentice in Jack Carson, I guess.
Fair enough.
Yeah, interesting that then. Got a couple of celebration kings down at Hove. And of course,
absolutely.
Both relatively young, yeah. We'll be doing it for many, many years to come, I imagine. But yeah, that does bring us to an end for today's first ever Christmas team, mates. I must admit, Joe, was a bit of a success and fantastic answers there, Ben, of course. But yeah, that does bring us to an end, not only to teammates, but of course, to today's podcast. So just before we end today's podcast then, Ben, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, for example?
No, I'm not here to promote anything. I've just come on the podcast. I've really enjoyed it. Love talking about cricket and all things county cricket. So if people want to follow my Twitter, I'm sure they'll find me, but I don't want to promote myself in case I bore people to tears on social media.
Well, no problem, Ben. And of course, we here at the County Cricket Podcast have loved having you on. You're always welcome back on. You've been a fantastic guest, some great answers in there. And yeah, it's been very, very thoroughly enjoyable. What was it, like an hour and 20 minutes there? Yeah, very, very good indeed. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast then. For all the listeners out there, thank you very much as always for listening in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.